Good
Hello.
morning.
Good morning. Is Harley there?
No, Harley's on the couch, licking her
Oh.
legs, bathing
Oh.
herself.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. So what's going on?
I was sitting cross-legged
Yeah.
on the
You
futon.
realized you had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and so I got up and I realized my leg had fallen asleep from the way I was sitting, so I had to walk like Frankenstein.
To the bathroom.
As my leg was asleep, it felt really weird.
That happens.
Yeah.
I like to sit like cross-legged when I'm bagging and boarding comics, and that happens to me a lot, where
Yeah.
I get up and it's like my something in my leg or foot is just numb.
Yeah. I think
Yeah.
it's a combo of sitting cross-legged and leaning forward a little bit.
Yeah. Blood flow
Yep.
and old age.
Yeah.
'Cause in
Yeah.
kindergarten they taught us to sit like that in a circle. And
Yeah.
I don't remember being numb then.
We were d in elementary school, we were doing that. We were all sitting in a circle on it had to have been close to kindergarten, if not kindergarten, and on the rug in the front of the classroom, and I threw up.
You threw up.
Yeah, I threw up, not from sitting cross-legged, but I threw
Oh,
up on the rug in front of everybody
wow.
in a circle. At
Was it
least
a
I think I
pentagram?
did.
Was it a pentagram?
Yeah, maybe. I got sick from the demonic influence.
Man, I've been watching that show Evil, and I have never been scared. Like I TV and movies don't usually scare me, but man, that shit just it goes beyond terror for me. And I
Don't
can't
really
get
know.
my eyes off of it. So, like, I watch it before bed, and that's a bad idea. I watch it in the morning, usually on the elliptical, and then I'll watch a little bit more right before bed, and I'm not going to do that anymore. Because then I get
Yeah,
night terrors.
I don't really know anything about it.
It's a CBS show. It's only one season so far, but it's been renewed for a second, but they don't have a start date because of the COVID. But
Okay.
it's about a soon to be priest, or he wants to become a priest that's working for a church to determine if people are really possessed or if miracles exist or various things that they want to investigate to see if it's real, if prophets are real, that kind of thing. And he has two people that work for him. He has a techie who's there to, debunk anything to see if there's glitches in cameras and lighting and stuff like that. And then they just hired a psychologist who's a skeptic to rule out, like she doesn't believe in any of the religious stuff, so she's explains things through psychiatry, and they go investigate these things. So you kind of get like a monster of the week, but it's so much more than that because it just builds on itself, and it turns out that there's this it's sort of a battle between heaven and hell, and hell is sort of breaking loose by taking over people, and it has like devils, demon agents that are on Earth in different locations, and they're starting to run into these things and put the pieces together, and it's just done really well in such a creepy way that I don't know, it's the story beats are just very addictive, and it's scary if you like to be scared for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. I know a number of the people in it. Luke Cage is in it.
Yeah, Luke Cage's the girl's amazing. The woman that plays the psychiatrist is really good too. And then it's got the guy from Lost. I don't know if you watched
Yeah,
Lost,
I saw
the
that.
Point
I
of
did, yeah.
Interest, and he's the bad guy. And he is the worst bad guy. Like, I mean, he oh God.
Yeah, he's good at playing that sort of character. I mean, his character
Oh.
on Lost was really sort of ambiguous, like morality and stuff, and he was really good at
And
that.
here he's terrifying. He is absolutely terrifying.
I could see that. Yeah, the main actress, I actually, she was on Westworld, which we watched.
Yeah.
So I actually do recognize her that from that too.
I haven't seen
So.
anything with her in it before, but I'm a fan now. Like, I've become a real fan of hers for just through this show.
Yeah, I'm sure this is like her biggest thing because she didn't have a huge part on Westworld. I'm sure this is probably Evil's getting her more exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we watched the first episode of Raised by Wolves last night. That was pretty crazy. That
I want to
was pretty
watch
good.
that. It's like in the queue, but me and Bill have been talking about like shows on Geek Brunch, and he's like, "Mike, you really got to watch this show, Evil." He had told me a long time ago, but Bill's not really good at like pushing me. Like, "Mike, drop what you're doing and you watch this because I know you'll like it." He doesn't. He tells me I'll like it, but he doesn't really go to the point where I would really like it, and I really liked it. Like, it was. I've never seen a show like or even a movie that has got me terrified. Like, there's aspects in this that just they go places that like no other show I think or movie has. I can't say movie, but have gone before. They it just oh man, it's creepy. I mean, it goes to like to the point where there's like just this is just to like frame some how dark this show is. There is a family. They have a baby, an older daughter, and a son that's in the middle. And they think that he might be possessed. He's been going to like clinical trials and all this stuff, but he's got like this murderous. He thinks about killing all the time, and he's hurt his family multiple times. So they're called in on this, and he's trying to crack the shell to find out if he's possessed or if it's just, he's sick. And you never really learn it, but it's one of those things where the family has to like cross this line. He threw his sister, baby sister, into the center of a pool. And was letting her drown there before Luke Cage came and dived into the water to save the kid, and it just goes to dark places. And then they show up there with the priest to exorcise the kid, and the wife answers the door and said he's missing, but he's not missing. The mother and father killed him. But they don't say that because the police are there, but you just know it happened. Like, they had to make the decision because he was going to kill them or their children. And man, it's just dark. It's so dark and crazy. Yeah, it's freaky.
That's cool. Yeah, the cast definitely increases its appeal to
Yeah.
me,
And it's
seeing
the thing
who's
I
in it,
like
so.
about it is it's not like one of those long seasons of 40 episodes or, 30 some. It's 12 episodes on
Yeah.
Netflix. So you'll know, and it's one of those shows like it wasn't like Umbrella Academy, like it took a while to grow on me. You know immediately if you're going to like it or not like it. Like you'll just know off the first episode.
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of show. And like I've read good things and that start off good and they kind of peter out or they have like bad episodes. I haven't seen one bad episode and I'm on episode 8 right now.
Yeah, I think the shorter seasons helps with that too. I like that that's becoming more of a thing in America, because I know in British TV that's kind of been the way they've done things for quite a while, but
I like it
But
too
it's not.
because it lets you try or invest in more instead of less. Like, you can watch more. You have more to pick from, and you can finish more seasons than if you just picked one and it's like 40 episodes. That's a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of times, and usually that when there's a longer season, they don't really need that many episodes.
Yeah.
So they kind of have your episodes that are sort of filler just to get to the amount of episodes.
And just before now, I was just watching a movie. I was watching Kickboxer again. Man, that's a good movie. Like, I just can't believe how fit Van Damme looks in that movie. Like, he's just stacked, man. And the fact that he can stretch his legs the way he stretches them is just
Yeah.
mind-blowing.
That always. I haven't seen that movie in since I was like a teenager.
Yeah, it has Ogre
It's been a
too
long
from
time.
Revenge of the Nerds. He plays his buddy. It's a good film.
Yeah, I remember those days when he was big star.
Yeah, it kind of
That
makes me
was.
want to go back and watch that Amazon Prime show called Van Damme.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the first season, and then every one of the shows came back, and I never saw the second season.
Oh, because it was part of the trial thing or something they were
Yeah, they
doing.
were all part of the trial, but they renewed all of them. There was one called like I Love Dick, and that was an interesting one too. And then there was The Tick, and I can't remember what the fourth one was. But they were all, that was like their first attempt, I think, at trying new shows. And they were all pretty good. Are you recording, by the way?
I should be.
Okay. I'm recording, but I had a
Yeah, it's
pop-up
recording.
come up set and say something like multi-thread error, but it looks like it's recording.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, actually, I had to. In between this time and the last time I recorded, I ended up doing a restore on my laptop because I was having the issues prior to the last time we recorded, and I was researching why my computer was running so slow, and I tried a couple different solutions, different processes to stop and that kind of thing, and one temporary worked, and I was able to record, but last time, but I still was having problems with just things running really slow because the disk usage on,
Was going really high.
yeah. Finally, I gave up because one thing that's nice now with Windows 10, like if you could do a restore, but it will save all your personal data.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about losing your files and stuff. So I did that. It took like 24 hours or something like that to actually complete. But and
Fixed
then
it.
it gave me I was able to start from scratch and just
Reapply
and.
patches from that point.
Yeah, and not have to worry about just different apps running in the background and stuff like that, and whatever. So it's been running pretty good since then. But I had to, yeah, put Skype back on and Skype recorder. I hadn't done that yet, so I just did that this morning.
Yeah, I had a
But.
weird problem last week. It upgraded to another version of Windows and I lost my sound. I mean, it still works through my headset, but I lost my laptop sound and also recording. But I could still record with my headset, so because that's a USB wireless. I lost like the driver, and the driver was there, and usually you could say, "Oh, I'll repair driver," and it would say, "Oh, you have the latest driver." And I did the weirdest thing is I said, screw it, I'm gonna deinstall the driver and reinstall it. And I deinstalled it, and it didn't deinstall it, but when When I rebooted again, it started working and it was there. So I don't know what the hell was going on. But it was weird. And I need to update my MP3 recorder. I just been lazy because Skype updates every week and it says, "Hey, you need to update your recorder," and I haven't been.
Yeah.
But now I think I better. But anyway, what do you got for us this week? Rob's not recording because he had a choice. And I guided him towards the other way. He can only record once, but we haven't recorded a DC Everything Else in such a long time. Like it's been over a month and a half. And I said we really should record that one because it's War Month. November is War Comics Month, and he said, "Okay, I'll do the night one," and that's why he's not here.
I see.
He could pick one, he couldn't pick both.
Yeah. So I got booted.
You got
That's
shafted.
not the right. That's not the. Yeah, there you go. That's a better word. He didn't want to talk to me.
No, he did. I just had to like nudge him because we haven't done one of those in a long time, whereas I just released
Yeah.
one of these shows.
Yeah.
That one's a harder show to get
Understandable.
together too because it's four of us. So
Yeah. That's a
it's
lot
much
to.
harder to coordinate. It's bad enough
Yeah.
coordinating three, but when you hit four, that's like the part that you can never get four together, almost never.
Now, do you have like where this will do it with two people? Obviously, do you have a threshold for that one?
Now, two people's pretty easy.
No, I mean, do
Coordinate.
you will you record that podcast with a certain number? Like, if you have less than four, will you record with three but not
Yeah,
two, or?
we've done. I think we've done one episode with two, but that's it. Everything else has been three.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes I just. I feel like that one has to at least come out once a month, and it's been like, it's more like once a month and a half if we're lucky. Because we recorded the Halloween one in September, and then we didn't record in October at all. Yep, so it's been a while since we've been recording that one. This one's been pretty good clockwork wise. Like if Rob doesn't show, you show, and then if I don't show, you and him do one.
Yeah, most of the time we were able to.
I think there's been like one or two times where two of us can't come,
Yeah.
but
But yeah,
that's
you.
usually kind of rare.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, yeah, I kind of went back to my old. I've been still reading manga, but I went back for the show. I went back to my old habit of picking random stuff off of Hoopla to instill some variety in the selections. And actually was kind of interesting to see that, because I hadn't really checked it in a little while, and it seems that, I think I've said before how a lot of it is trades, but there's also some publishers that put individual issues on there. And if you're reading a lot, it's not really a good way to go, because you only have a certain amount of checkouts per month. Based on whatever your library decides. But if you're just reading a few things and you know you're not going to read a lot through it, or it's towards the end of the month, you could grab a single issue and use one of your credits on it. And so it seems that at some point Valiant has started to put single issues on there.
I wouldn't think that Hoopla would even find it, because libraries have to pay for that service. So
Right.
I don't, I find it unusual that they would go down to the floppy level, I guess. Because I have heard stories that it costs a lot of money that to have a Hoopla service.
Yeah, I mean, some libraries don't for that reason. Well, for the library for Hoopla, it's no skin off of their back, I would assume, because they make money as long as people check stuff out. That's why
Yeah.
libraries limit the amount that you can check out each month, is because the way it works is libraries pay per checkout.
Right.
So that's why they limit it. But from Hoopla's perspective, as long as you're checking stuff out, they don't care if it's, if you're getting how much of a bang for your buck you're getting, so to speak, I would assume. But yeah, when I if I'm reading a, if I know I'm reading a lot, then I avoid, I want to get as much as I can for each of the checkouts. The library I use has 10 per month, so you could burn through that really quick if you're reading a lot.
But
So
you
you
could
definitely
check
want to be for
out like trades
trades.
versus a single, so you'd get more free.
Yeah.
A trade costs one checkout, just like a single would, right?
Yeah, so you
Yeah.
definitely want to go with trades if you're reading a lot. Today, I mean, I'm not using it a lot right now, so I went ahead and just checked out single issues. So that happened to be like what popped up, and I thought, yeah, I'll read this, just see what it's like. So I've noticed that Valiant, they've been on Hoopla as long as I've been checking it, and they do have trades on there. They've always had their newer trades on there, meaning like current day Valiant. But I noticed that there's older stuff on there too, and so it looks like they've started to maybe a difference in the new management and stuff. Put older stuff on there by single issue. I had never heard of this, but you probably have. It's called the Grackle. It's actually in a I mean, it's under Valiant, but it's actually
That's a
Acclaim
claim.
Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually
I'm
Acclaim on the
surprised that
cover.
that's out there, 'cause those are crime comics.
Yeah, it's also so only issue one is on here so far. It was recently added, so they're probably gonna add the other ones. But I looked up, it's actually the whole series is on Comixology. If you want to look for the rest of it, it's a 4-issue series. Well, I like crime comics to begin with, and I was kind of looking for non-superhero stuff. But I was also the creative team caught my eye because it's written by Mike Baron with pencils by, well, art, because it looks like he does the inks also, Paul Galassi, who I also like. And yeah, it's black and white, so no colorist. And the first issue is called Fire in the Hole. So yeah, it's a crime comic. It's like political also somewhat. It takes place in New York City. It deals with a ex-cop who is kind of like a fallen cop. And when it starts out, he's hanging out as like security, incognito security. He's just hanging out at like a back booth at an illegal gambling den in Chinatown. And they're so this rival triad group, the Flying Tigers, make a hit on the gambling den. And there's this drug on the streets called Firefly. And what's kind of crazy is it literally makes you burn. The way it, the way the narrative, so it's written, kind of in that PI style, narrated by that main character I mentioned, and as he describes it, tigers get high on Firefly, a new designer drug that literally lights you up. I've seen addicts spit sparks, but I don't believe that crap about flare-ups. Not my idea of fun, but the colonel insisted. I go where he sends me. Turns out the whole, I guess what he's referring to with the flare-ups is true. This guy stands up during the firefight and starts screaming, starts tearing at his shirt, and he's just spontaneously combusts. They have to pull out the fire extinguishers to put him out, and all that's left when it's over is a skeleton. And skeleton's wearing a watch. He puts something over his hand because it's hot, and he takes it off, and there's a dedication on the back from the current mayor Lattimore, and it's dedicated to Ryan, so he's able to recognize it as the current mayor's campaign manager. So he's working for Chun Fat Lin, who's he's a member of the Three Fists of Iron, they're called. He's the owner of the club that got hit by the Flying Tigers, and he wants to get revenge for the hit on his club. And the main character, he resists. Like, that's not his kind of job to just put out, just to go kill a whole bunch of people. Lin is going to send his own man in, this like huge muscled dude called Mr. Loon. We see that the main guy, he lives like down this in this area town called Alphabet City, down this alleyway, and he's got a lover named Blaze Mancini, and she happens to be the daughter. It doesn't seem like he knew this when they first hooked up, but she's the daughter of Derek Mancini, who is running in the election against the current mayor, Lattimore. So we finally see Lattimore. He gives a press conference on TV about the fact that his campaign manager was died in a gambling den, an illegal gambling den, and making a statement of the fact he wasn't using campaign funds, et cetera, et cetera. Things get further complicated in that Mr. Loan that works for Lin does his work that he was assigned earlier and makes a hit on a yacht full of Flying Tiger members. So that further complicates things for the mayor. They're calling it the death boat on the news. We see a conversation he has with one of his aides, and he seems to be in with Chun Fat Lin, and getting money from him. Then we get to meet the Mancini, the guy that's running against him, whose daughter the main character's dating. The main character's name is Cross. I remember that till I got to the point that's mentioned here. But his daughter, comes to meet with her father, and Cross has bugged her purse so he can listen in on their conversation. He justifies that she rifled his closet and helped herself to one of his shirts. And So, the last scene of the issue is Cross goes out on the street and he gets confronted by a couple cops. One of which, remembers him from Muggs Murphy, remembers him from when he was when Cross was still a cop. And a lot of the cops in the city are corrupt, it seems. So they're trying to bring him in to see the I think to see the commissioner, but they get in a fight and he easily takes care of them. And one of the guys says, "You've been marked since you joined Internal Affairs." So I'm not real sure from that if they're just saying that, when he did that, when he was a cop, he's had a target on his back, or if he still is secretly working for Internal Affairs. It's a little unclear. But it ends with him taking off and some more police cars chasing him, and he's wondering who it is really that wants him. As far as he knows, that Chun Fat Lin was the only one that knew that he was at the club that night, and so that leads him to wonder if, if there is really a connection between Chun and the mayor. But if that's the case, why aren't the police, who a lot of them are controlled by Chun, why aren't they going after the Flying Tigers and instead of him? So, like I said, I'm a fan of the creative team. I like Paul Gulacy's art. I'd say for the most part, it's pretty good. There's, it's a dense script, and if you read too quickly, like I had to kind of go back and double check things a couple times going through it. It doesn't hold your hand in terms of following all the different players, with, the mayor and the guy running against him, and two different crime groups, and how everything is connected. And it leaves a number of questions up in the air, which, is a good thing in terms of wanting to keep you reading. But yeah, maybe a little overly dense at a couple points, just in terms of following it all. But it's a comic. You don't have to, hit the rewind button. You can just flip back a couple pages and double check names and stuff. So for the most part, I enjoyed it. I definitely think it's way better than something that's like probably as obscure as it is. I mean, I'm kind of making some assumptions in terms of the fact that I hadn't heard of it, which doesn't mean a lot of people haven't, but I've spent a lot of time reading comics and talking about comics, and it's cool that it's out there available on Comixology if people want to check it out. And I think it's
Yeah, I
included in
was
Comixology Unlimited, so.
pretty shocked to see it there, actually. I mean, I have it. I
So.
have the physical copies, but I have that and Grave Diggers. There was like, I don't know, three or four crime titles that they came out with. They had Acclaim had their main line, which was the Valiant. Then they had this crime, and then they had one called what was it called? Wind Dancer or Windjammer, where it was like Neil Adams and Mike Grell, and they were like doing director's cuts of some of their books, like from Continuity Studios or Star Slayer from First or whatever it was from Pacific. I can't remember. I think it was from both. I think it crossed over, but yeah, they tried their hand in a lot, just like CrossGen did towards the end of their life. It seems like when they expand, it's the death of a company.
Yeah.
CrossGen sort of did the same thing with licensed properties and different lines, and as soon as that happened, it all went downhill. But I don't know if it's because they overextend themselves or what happens, but I think it was a good idea. 'Cause I think
Yeah,
crime
it could be the
comics
opposite.
have a place. They have a following. It's just not a lot of people. Like the best thing you can get into now is like Criminal or what is that other one by David Laugham? I can't remember what it's called. Stray Bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one
Well,
has had a lot of.
is Hard Case Crime still doing comics?
No, they are doing some, but they're not comics anymore. So they used to do stuff in like single issue, and now they're going like if there's one they want to publish, it goes like directly to hardcover. So you get the usually it's like just one hardcover, but they
Well,
don't
yeah,
do them as much as they used to.
I didn't mean specifically floppies, just whether they're
Yeah.
doing that format at all, because they started out as a book and they're mainly a book publisher.
Yeah, they are still publishing out a bunch of books. That's where I started reading some. Well, I started reading one, but I actually bought a couple of their crime novels just on cover alone. Because their covers are just, they are so good. But
Yeah, they're the retro style.
yeah, it's like I don't even know how to. It's like a painted men's adventure magazine style, if you will.
Yeah, they're the pulp. I mean, because they used to,
Pulp,
back in the day, they
yeah,
used
a
to,
pulp style, yeah.
that's how they did a lot of the covers like that. That's just the same style as
Yeah, and
they used to
I
have.
like Galassi as well. Like, he has a great cover in that first issue for sure. He's got the sexy woman in the background and the guy with guns in the foreground. Looks like a Bond cover. Violence, betrayal, sex, and the hits just keep on coming. But my choice isn't as sophisticated as yours, but it was interesting enough. It's Image Comics number 0. And what this comic was a mail-in comic where if you ripped out a coupon in Youngblood, Shadow Hawk, Cyber Force, Spawn, and I can't remember what the other one was, you could send in the coupon and get an exclusive Image number 0. And I never did
Yeah, I remember
because
that.
I never wanted to rip out the coupon. So I never did the coupon things mostly. I didn't even rip the cards on my Star Wars figures to get the Boba Fett. Like, I could have, but I didn't. But I didn't buy like 12 copies and then say, oh, I can rip the coupon out of this cover and send away for it. But I forgot all about it, to tell you the truth. And I was listening to the Rob Servations podcast, and he mentioned it, and he was talking about it, and I want to be a completist on Eric Larson works, and that's the real reason I went for it. Plus, on the Rob Liefeld side, it is the first appearance of Troll, and he's kind of he looks like an older Puck, if you will, with Wolverine hair, and I think these stories are were. There wasn't a lot there, but it was a way for all the artists to showcase their art again and focus in like on a 8-page story on some of the characters that they wouldn't normally get to focus on in their main title. And the first story is just Troll. He's sort of being observed in a training room at the Pentagon, kind of like the Danger Room. And fighting a bunch of droids, and he's just getting ready to become part of Youngblood. And I think he does become part of Youngblood in like issue 6 of Youngblood. So he was his first appearance is in here, and that's one thing that Rob Liefeld did a lot of is create a lot of characters all at once. And then the second story, so the first story is by Rob Liefeld with inks by Art Thibert, and he did the story as well. The second story is by Jim Lee with Scott Williams. Man, Scott Williams has been inking Jim Lee for a long time. And Jim Lee and Brandon Choi on the story.
There he is.
Yeah, he's been on him forever. And this story is a Stormwatch story, which focuses on a city of Gomorrah, which I guess is supposed to be close to like Vegas, like a city of sin, and a villain called Death Trap, and he's basically a merc, a mercenary that hunts down people, and he's captured a couple of the members of Stormwatch, and then this ties right into Stormwatch. He also has an interesting sexual thing at the beginning, 'cause they're in the city of Gomorrah, and I don't know if he's with a prostitute or a girl he met. And the girl gets out of bed and she says, "That's it, lover? I've been in commercials that have lasted longer." I thought that was funny. But he didn't like that. He didn't take kind to that. He hit her in the face pretty hard and kicked her out of the room. So that wasn't
Yikes.
a good remark to make to this like albino looking god deity, because she didn't make out for the better of it. But it was pretty funny. This book wasn't meant to be funny, but that remark was funny. And then Todd McFarlane probably said, "I don't got time for this shit, guys. I gotta work on Spawn, so but I will contribute. So I'll give you some centerfolds." He drew four characters, one called the Freak, and I believe he appeared in Spawn. Another character called Blotch. It doesn't look familiar to me at all. It looks like a toad with spider legs on it. It's very weird. Another character called Sweet. Or Sweat. He looks pretty unusual. He looks like a Star Slayer with pink boots and pink gloves. It's pretty interesting. He's inked by Dan Panosian. Blood did appear in Spawn. Actually, matter of fact, I think Blood had an action figure. I think I have it in the basement somewhere. So he did that. And then we get what I really came for the to the party for was an Eric Larson one. It has five pages, no, 4 pages of Eric Larson story, and I know I've read it, but I didn't know where I read it, because this is like original content, and I did research and I tried to find out where I would have read it, and I couldn't find out where I read it. So I actually tweeted Eric Larson and I said, "Was this published before?" And he said, "Not in a comic, not in a monthly comic, but it was in the 99-cent reprints and the collected edition." And that's probably where I read it, because I was reading the black and white collected edition archive fairly recently, and I remember reading this. I just didn't I didn't know where it came from, and I wanted to know the history of it. And he's just basically with his girlfriend. This is how what happens in Savage Dragon fairly early. He's with his girlfriend Debbie, and they play a part because the mother hates her dating a dragon. Well, I don't blame her. Like, there's this mutant guy with a fin on his head, and your daughter is in the sack with him. And
That's prejudice, Mike.
he is a dragon. I mean, come on. But they're having like after sex giggles, and he's shaving and all. And then somebody knocks on the door, and she goes and gets the door, and she's shot in the head. And Dragon runs to the door, and she's dead. And that plays a big part in Savage Dragon, because his the mother goes to try to kill Dragon, and because of the death of her daughter, and The guy that shot her in the head, as soon as he shoots her in the head, he takes the gun and puts the gun nozzle in his mouth and blows his brains out. So you're like, what? But yeah, it's pretty violent, and an important part of the story, because the story in South, the monthly, does play upon that. It just doesn't show these like behind the scenes with them before the actual gunshot. So that's the addition to the story that you get, is the banter between them and before the actual gunshot happens. And then you get a Cyber Force Stryker story, and it's just them putting cybernetics into his body at the medical table with the Silvestri artwork, and it's written by him as well. And last but not least, you get a Shadowhawk written and penciled by Jim Valentino, and inked by somebody we all know, Chris Ivy. So,
Oh, I forgot I did that.
yeah, you did that back in the day. You were big time, man.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of drugs at that time. So I don't remember a lot of the stuff I did.
Like Stephen King during Maximum Overdrive.
That's what I was thinking of, actually, with Stephen King. He said he's got that time period where he said he doesn't really remember writing Tommyknockers.
I did not know at all that Stephen King was on coke until Barb told me yesterday. 'Cause yesterday I decided I wanted to rewatch Maximum Overdrive, 'cause I'm pretty fond of that movie. It's just goofy fun. And she was reading, as we were watching the movie, she was reading the IMDb facts, and she was like, Stephen King was hopped on coke. And he even makes fun of it with some coke, like, I was so messed up. It's the worst movie I've ever made. And it actually had the voice of the actress that does Lisa Simpson is in that movie. She's part of a
Oh,
newlywed couple, and it has Emilio Estevez, but I'll get into that later. Shadowhawk was a he's a he's sort of like a vile Batman cross of Wolverine, I guess, because he's got the claws. And this story was pretty violent, because it's a woman protecting is it the a young daughter of hers, and a predator comes about them, and it looks like he's going to rape her, but the mother tries to pull a knife on him to protect her daughter. And then he s slits her throat, stabs her in the neck, and then Shadowhawk comes, and he Shadowhawk was known for like killing his the bad guys, especially breaking their backs. And that's sure enough what he did, is he broke the back. But the sad part of the story is tragedy, because the daughter's left there holding the corpse of the mother, 'cause she was just murdered. And so you had two tragic tales in this. You had Savage Dragon's girlfriend getting murdered, and Shadowhawk's trying to protect a mother and daughter and getting there too late. He basically admits to he was late. So yeah, it was a fun experience to go down a story path that I've never read before, except for the Savage Dragon. I remember reading it, and it was driving me crazy. I was trying to research it. Where did I read this? Where did I read this? And yeah, it was in that archive. But now I
Yeah,
have it. I'm one more step towards getting closer to a complete Eric Larson library. I mean, there's some stuff I'll never achieve, like the graphic fantasy, but other than that, I'm gonna get close.
cool. Yeah, I did see your exchange with him on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's cool that he answers questions.
Yeah, and so does Liefeld too, for the most part, 'cause Rob will mention something, and then I just want just a little bit more. Like, he explained it in the podcast, but I want to know more so I could find something or buy something, and he always answers.
Cool.
Yeah, which is kind of nice.
So speaking of going back to Valiant again, this one you'll probably end up having to help me out with a little bit, since you know more about Valiant Universe than I do, because this one is Valiant Universe, and it's Time Walker Zero,
Oh, that's a good one.
from '96. That's this is Bob Hall and Don Perlin, inks by Mike Manley. So it's supposed to be like the origin of several characters. Time Walker, if focuses on Time Walker, of course, but Armstrong and Eternal Warrior too, I believe. And so it starts around 4000 BC, and there's a man named Vandal, and a woman named Triana, and they're being observed by a human woman as they're fighting their way through aliens. And Triana's pregnant, and the human woman that's observing them, she's dressed like she's got a cloak, and she kind of looks like she's a sorceress of some sort, but she's thinking about how the aliens that they're fighting their way through are just like overbred insects. But Vandal and Triana, their race is young and their genes are strong, and she wants to own their child. So it jumps forward a couple years, and Vandal has two sons, Ivor and Gilead, and his wife is in labor with a third son, who's like the birthing women that are helping with the birthing say, he's very huge and it's going to be a difficult birth. And I'll take a sip of water. So his wife, Triana, she ends up dying in childbirth, but the boy lives. And Ivar is really upset that his mother has died. So he takes off running from their village. He trips and falls, and he's laying on the ground, and then this giant spaceship crashes to the ground nearby, he's buried in some rubble, but he is okay, surprised. So it's we see that woman from the beginning again, the sorceress kind of looking woman with just dark hair, a streak of white through the center. She's got some of the same looking aliens from the beginning with her as well. We still don't really know who she is or what's going on with her, but clearly from like a different time and stuff. The boy, Ivar, witnesses some of this, and so he runs back to his village to tell his father. And everyone in the village has been killed. his mother's body was prepared and on a funeral pyre to be burned, but it's just lying there because everyone died. But he doesn't find his father, Vandal, or his brother's bodies. But he's distracted by all this, doesn't see that the aliens are approaching behind him, and one comes up and grabs him and takes him to that woman who we finally learned her name is Jakurt. She says, your father, Vandal, was genetically unique, and I need to know if you are as well. And so she tells them to tells the aliens to break his legs to see if he heals, and he does. And they continue to do this to him. It's kind of funny. It says 100 years pass, and then in the next panel, Ivor's a lot older. Not 100 years older, but he's like an adult now. But like, they drew Jakurt wearing the exact same clothes as 100 years ago, apparently. And every just thing looks the same except for Ivar. So it really, if you didn't, I don't know what was going on there. If I just didn't, if there was a little miscommunication there, misunderstanding there, but it definitely doesn't. The art definitely doesn't sell the point that 100 years has passed. Some time has passed because Ivar is much bigger, but anyway, we finally get an explanation of what's going on with this woman, Jakurt. She explains that in the future she was a biomanipulator, and she had pretty much manipulated her own genes to make herself immortal, but she was called mad and sentenced to suspension cryogenics, and she escaped through time, but her ship crashed and she was marooned in time. So she struck a bargain with the aliens we've been seeing her with, and it's been 250 years, and she's been all this time working on a way to get back to her own time, and she sees Ivar as the key to that. She wants him to, she can't travel through time without appropriate vessel, but she believes he can, and he could go travel through time and bring her back a ship so she can get back. So that nicely fills in things for us, what's been going on. And so then they basically let him free, but they make it seem like he's escaping. They make him think that he's escaping, but they're actually tracking him, and they purposely release a woman, an attractive woman of his age, and basically engineer it so that they would encounter each other and interact, and neither of them has ever been around someone their age, the opposite sex. And as the caption reads, soon the inevitable happens. This was the intention of all along, to have them breed. The aliens want to kill him, kill Ivor now, and then just hold on to the girl until she gives birth. But Jektar, or Jakurt rather, she purposely leaves this compass that has that Vandal, his father, gave him a long time ago. That is what he can use to travel through time. So she purposely leaves it for him to use, he breaks out of his cell when the opportunity arises and saves the girl to take with him. They escape and jump through time, and they don't know, where in time they're going. And unfortunately, the woman dies, and Ivor doesn't know if he's in the past or in the future, or if it's another trap. But then, so he goes into what he thinks is a cave for shelter and lies down to rest. And all of a sudden, he feels the ground tremble. And what he sees is a monster with smoke steaming from its nostrils, fire belching from its bowels, glaring at him with its single yellow eye. We know is a train, and it's bearing down the tracks, which is what he was laying on. And that's the end of the issue.
I think you'd like to read like early Valiant because you like continuity quite a bit, like history, and you would dig the brothers like Eternal Warrior and Archer and Armstrong and Time Walker.
Yeah, I liked like I read the Evalian reboot early on for a while, and I liked Archer and Armstrong a lot, but and I know they started with some stuff with Eternal Warrior and stuff, but I didn't really get too much into that. But this issue was cool. Like I said, there was a few quirks with the art, but now Ivar's the Time Walker, and
Galad
Gilly
is Galad
Gilad
is the Eternal
Armstrong.
Warrior.
Oh, he's okay. So that third baby that was being born that was huge, that has to be Armstrong then,
Armstrong,
right?
yeah.
Gotcha.
The
Yeah,
Brothers
so it was
Three.
cool. When Acclaim bought Valiant, and did they reboot or did they continue
They
the
continued it, but
continuity?
they were really towards heading. They bought them mostly because they thought they could make games. So they came out with many Turok games. They came out with a Shadow Man game. I think there was an Exo Man of War game, and then there was an Exo Man of War Iron Man heavy metal game. But they had some success with like Birthquake. They relaunched the titles. The if I remember correctly, the brothers went quarterly in a title called Eternal Warriors, and it was about all three brothers, but you could not get like a title like Archer and Armstrong or Eternal Warrior or Time Walker. They were all in the Eternal Warriors book. And they started to go quarterly and do a lot of mini series for the most part when they took over. And from what I understand, they didn't do that bad. Their comics fell under because the gaming industry that they were in was losing so much money. Whereas the comics weren't as they weren't doing great, but they were doing well enough to make be in the profit margin. But the gaming industry, whatever happened with Acclaim, I don't know exactly because I'm not too far into the gaming industry. But what I've heard is they tanked the comic industry, the comic side of it, because the gaming industry was going down the toilet. So yeah, I don't. There's some interesting Acclaim titles. Shadow Man probably being the best. They revamped Exo Man of War eventually. Like they didn't do it right away. They didn't revamp like the history. They revamped it later. They brought Mark Waid on to do Exo Man of War. They made Ninjak like a video game s character, like a kid that could transport or call upon the video game that he was playing. They did a lot of like revamps. Shadow Man became a cop called he was a cop called Zero they did really good with that, because Jack died in the first issue of their version of Shadow Man, and then Bloodshot got kind of more violent and weird. I don't know what else they did. Those are the four that I remember. And then Turok was, they de-aged Turok into a teenager and sort of made him like a Cadillacs and Dinosaurs kind of guy, where he was a kid fighting dinosaurs, sometimes on Earth and sometimes not. And there's some weird stuff with that
Interesting.
because they changed formats a lot. Like, you have to buy the magazines. I had to, when I was trying to complete stuff, some of those magazines were hard to track down. And there's some digest size stuff. But yeah, it's a cool company to follow for sure. A lot of history, a lot of changes. But I think you dig like Eternal Warrior and Archer and Armstrong. Archer and Armstrong, the original one, was so good. I mean, that's what made me become a Valiant fan to begin with. Once I picked up Archer and Armstrong number zero, I was hooked, and I was like, I gotta have everything these guys are doing. And then I went back and tried to buy all the back issues. But and they were pretty expensive back then because of Wizard magazine, but in the low print runs. But my next book is another Savage Dragon book that I was trying to track down, and it's from 1995, August of 1995. It's from Mirage Studios, and at this time Mirage was playing with various titles: Ninja Turtles, Stupid Heroes, Xenophobes, all kinds of weird titles. I think they were getting ready to call it quits too, because at the end of this issue it says the final issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 13 is coming out. And then this issue specifically is continued in Savage Dragon, so it never finishes unless you jump over to the Savage Dragon and read Savage Dragon 22. And then there is another crossover called Savage Dragon Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I still have to track down. And this opens up the writer and artist is Michael Dooney, and I could swear that I've met this guy and not known that he used to work for Mirage Studios. Like, he draws sexy women pinups and stuff at the conventions. I think I have a couple of prints I bought from him, and I think I bought a Wonder Woman commission from him, if I remember correctly. And then the so Laird and what they weren't doing this. Peter Laird and why can I think of his name?
Kevin Eastman.
Thank you, Kevin Eastman. They were running the company, but they weren't writing this particular title. So this opens up with Raphael coming to talk to his brothers, and he knows that he's listening to the news and stuff, and there's this character called Carnage that's destroying pieces of property in Chicago and killing lots of people. So he wants to hitch a ride over to Chicago because Carnage is their villain. He wants to take his brothers with him, but they don't agree to go with him, so he goes by himself. He goes by train or subway. No, it's actually train. He goes by a train over there, and Carnage disrupts the bridge that the train is going over, and he kind of crashes through the sewers, where he runs into three of the characters that we know from Savage Dragon: Widow, Rock, and Beast Boy. Not the Beast Boy from the Titans, but the Beast Boy from Savage Dragon. And they kind of have a throwdown with those guys. Meanwhile, in this comic too, at this time, they were doing color comics of the Ninja Turtles, but they didn't color their masks, different colors. So you had to know them by weapon and personality. So they all had the color of Raphael mask. It was red. And they go undercover and they're trying to talk to a character called Radical, and she's like a talisman or a mystic. And they get information on the location of Carnage. She helps them get the location of Carnage, so they're headed towards Chicago. And there's the huge skirmish there, and then Savage Dragon shows up, and Raphael tells them I guess they've met before. He tells them the story of Carnage and what they need to do to take him down. So they go to take him down, and then you get a center page spread by Michael Dooney doing a She-Dragon spread in the middle, which is kind of nice. And then they run into Carnage, and it's a huge throwdown. They have one unique panel in here, though, that should have been like a center page fold-out spread or something like that. And it's so weird because it's like half the page is drawn on one page, and then you have to flip the page over to see the other half of it. But it was like meant to be in the center of the book, but it didn't work out that way when they laid it out, I guess. And then the brothers show up, the rest of Michelangelo, Leonardo, and Donatello show up to help Savage Dragon and Raphael. They punch Carnage through a building, Savage Dragon does, and then the building collapses on all everybody, and they say, "Holy shit!" And they said, "To be continued in Savage Dragon 22. Aloha." And one of the Ninja Turtles says, "Continued? What a rip." And then it has an advertisement for TMNT number 12 and 13, which I think are the final in the series, which should be interesting. But yeah, it was a cool comic from Mirage Publishing. And I want to get the other half of it, even though it's not related to this story. This one's continued in Savage Dragon to see where the other crossover goes.
Nice. Yeah. Going back to the, you mentioned CrossGen earlier, and going back to that, I think you shared, yeah, I think it was Route 666 or
Yeah,
something
Rob.
like that you read recently, or one of you read
Yeah,
recently.
Rob read it because Joe is moving. You know, Joe Crawford. We record the DC Everything Else with, and
Yeah, I
he
know
was
Joe.
trying to get rid of some of the books that he doesn't want to, I guess, take with him.
Oh,
And
okay. Yeah, I haven't listened to your guys' episode yet.
right, so he gave us a lot of those books. Like we were on we have a Twitter group thing, and he was like saying, "Okay, I got these," and me and Rob were going back and forth and say, "I want that, I want that." And he was focusing most on the cross gen, and I already have a full run of cross gen. There might be a few things that I'm missing towards the end of the line. Mostly those license things, like they started to play around with Space Ace and Dragon's Lair, those cartoon video games. And then they played around with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and a couple other things. And I don't have those, but I did he did send me a couple of Dragon's Lair comics, which are hard to get. And he sent Rob, I think it was a full run of Route 66. Route 666. And that's how that came about.
I see.
Yeah.
It's I read a lot of CrossGen back when they were coming out, and it's really kind of a bummer that Marvel bought them and just buried it.
Yeah, they just couldn't hit the profit margins that I think that needs to be a Marvel comic at the time. They tried to relaunch, but they didn't relaunch in the vein that it was originally intended. I think they came out with three titles, maybe it was two. Sigil, Roos. Roos was more closer to the original Roos than Sigil was. Sigil was something completely different. They tried, but it didn't succeed. And just like any time, that's the difference between DC and Marvel, in my opinion, is when DC acquires a company, they try to keep those characters alive, even if it's short appearances or a mini series here and there. But Marvel just lets those things die. Like they had the Ultraverse at one time, and they had CrossGen, and you never see anything from those characters anymore.
Yeah, I mean, even if they're not going to do anything with it, it'd just be nice if they made them available somehow. But maybe it's the way that the cross-gen
Well, I know there's a
rights were set up or something, or
I know there's a co
creators' rights.
I know there's com a complication with the Ultraverse, because they have to pay the creators something. I don't know if that's the same with cross-gen, but maybe it is.
Maybe.
So they don't see it viable, I guess. But
Yeah.
if they own it, they should at least license it out to somebody else that wants to play it with it, I think.
The thing I like with CrossGen and Valiant is nothing against superheroes, but it's rare that you get a connected universe that isn't superheroes in comics, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Sigil's kind of loosely connected. Like you don't see like them connecting directly until the end. They're connected through that Sigil thing. But some happen in the future, some happen in the past, some are contemporary, but it all has like loose everything's like loosely tied, whereas Valiant's like tightly tied in that same universe. I think what CrossGen was doing was trying to just tap into every genre, and then sort of make a universe out of it, but it wasn't necessarily, you didn't have to read one to read the other. You can read Meridian and Sigil and Negation, and they were all sort of in their own little worlds. Whereas the other Valiant started out that way, but when Unity happened early on in the it sort of united everything, united the entire so it was like a little Marvel universe. But
Yeah,
it
that's true. Like, CrossGen wasn't where you had to read everything to know what was going on, but if you
right.
did, there was things that you could pick up on.
But they did play with like sci-fi, like Rye happened in the future with Magnus, and Exo Man of War was closest thing to a superhero I think you could get. And other than that, you get Ninjak, who's like a superhero but more of a martial artist. And Archer and Armstrong's about a guy that can handle almost any weapon, and then Archer, who's like super strong and immortal. An Eternal Warrior is an immortal, and so is Time Walker, except he travels through time. And Shadow Man is more like supernatural horror. But it was fun. It was a good universe. I like dead universes. I really do.
Well, speaking of something that's not, I keep trying to have segues. I don't know why. But speaking of something that's not superheroes, the last thing I chose off of Hoopla was Betty and Veronica, issue 137. This looks to be from 1967. It made me chuckle straight from the cover because it's got Betty and Veronica, and they've got these outfits that are all like different colored stripes, and like Veronica's got a tie on and a that matches her belt, which is orange with black polka dots, and they're supposed to be Veronica's hat is black and white checkers, and they're supposed to be like from the English mod scene. Veronica says, "Daddy, what do you think would go best with our mod outfits?" And he says, "Colorblind boyfriends." So that made me chuckle right from the beginning, which was a good start. So one thing I'll say is just from the style, one thing about Archie Comics is that the art just really stands out. I mean, stands up over time, you know? Because the style, it just doesn't really get old, you know? The first story is called The Payoff, and it starts out with, as Betty's walking by, Archie says, "There she is, Miss America." Veronica's right there next to him, and she gets angry because he's exaggerating, because she was just all it was she was elected Miss Fourth Period French class. And he says, "I was just joking," and accuses she says, "You shouldn't be so jealous," and so she just really flips out at that point. "Me jealous, Veronica Lodge, with all my obvious advantages, I should be jealous of that poor yellow-haired imitation of a woman." And she's throwing Archie around the hall, and so she goes off, and she uses her charms to convince Reggie to get back at Betty for her to do something to Betty for her, as her all-time goal of keeping Archie to herself. So Reggie goes and tells Betty that Mr. Weatherby, the principal, he wants her to bring all the paper clips from the supply room to his office because he's taking inventory. And Betty, she'll believe anything anyone tells her. So while she's doing that, Reggie goes and puts a trip wire on the door to the principal's office. And so when she rushes in, her hands full of all these boxes of paper clips, she trips on the trip wire and throws the whole armload of paper clip boxes at Weatherby. So it jumps to a little later on, and she's walking like all bent over, holding her back, and she knows it was his fault somehow, and but she can't stand up straight because she was picking up 4 million paper clips. But Mr. Weatherby, he's such a nice guy. He wasn't mad at her. He sees Veronica walking by and says, "Can you do me a favor and take these paper clips back to the supply room for me?" And so as she's doing that, Betty's coming through the door and down the hallway, and opens up the door right as Veronica's going to walk by, and she smashes into it and drops the paper clips all over the place, of course. Just like Betty, she has to pick them all up. And it ends with Betty and Veronica both still like bent over at the waist, hiding around a corner as Reggie's about to walk by, and Veronica's holding a baseball bat. So The next story is called Tops and Op, and this is the one that connects with the cover. So Veronica has mod cheerleader outfits flown in from England for them to wear for the basketball game. And she even has these op art parasols to go with their outfits. So they're like yellow with black swirl on them. So the basketball game is going to start, and the crowd starts going wild, and like the players, like, what's going on? And it's for the cheerleaders. I guess their mod outfits are pretty popular, to such the fact that it's like a huge distraction, and the players are on both teams, like, can't concentrate on the game, and the ball's just going all over the place. The coach is getting real angry, and he's about to get rid of the cheerleaders, tell them to leave. And I don't know, he's like the water boy or something like that, stops him and says, "Hang on, we've got a player on our team who's the only one that's immune to girls." And you see Jughead sitting there, like, not paying any attention to anything. He's sitting on the bench. And so he sends Jughead in, and sure enough, Jughead has no interest. The other team continues to be distracted by the girls, and especially with their, like, spinning those op art parasols, that Jughead wins the game for him, 49-6, and they're like, earlier Veronica had promised that she was going to treat whoever won the game like a king. So Betty gets to go to the dance with Archie on one arm and Reggie on the other, and Veronica's serving Jughead burgers and cokes, of course. And then the last
So
one,
Betty won, really.
and then the last story is called Ugly Duckling, and this one, the whole thing is so Veronica's dad tells her that Mr. Billingsley, I guess somebody over in England, he's gonna send his son over to America, and he says, maybe you could show him around town. And she's like, "Little Percival, you gotta be kidding me." And she's like, "We still have his picture here from last time they were there." And he's like, "So?" She said, "He's ugly." And her dad says, "That was years ago. He's probably changed by now." But she's not convinced. He's like, "That's not the right attitude to have." And he leaves to go pick him up, and she's, extremely superficial. So and she's worried that she's gonna be laughed at for being seen with this guy. And so she calls Betty and asks her if she wants to go out with him instead. And Betty's like, "Well, I don't know." And Veronica tells her, "I'll let you have any two of my new dresses if you do this for me." And so she agrees and shows up, and Veronica, Mr. Lodge, is like, "Well, why are you here, Betty?" And she said, "Oh, well, Veronica's sick. I thought you knew that." And so he knows what his daughter's up to and what she's scheming. So he's like, "Well, she'll see." And of course, as anyone could predict, Percival turns out, to have grown up into quite the handsome young man, and he's quite the charmer, and Veronica's upstairs in her pajamas pretending to be sick, and she overhears the conversation downstairs. She hears Betty say that she's the lucky one, and she's like, "What the heck's going on?" But she doesn't want them to see her. So she somehow sneaks outside in her pajamas, and it's winter outside, so she's freezing, but she gets a chance to peek in through the window to see that, what's going on. Oh, so yeah, she climbs out her window because we see her. We don't see her go down, but we see her climbing back up the lattice to her window. So she goes back in her room and changes into a nice dress and comes down. And it's like, oh, I suddenly feel better. But then she sneezes, and her dad's like, "Yeah, I don't think so. You get back to bed." And so she got sick by going out in the snow in her pajamas. And the doctor comes and says that she has to stay in bed for the week, which is the amount of time that Percival's going to be visiting. So it ends with her thinking that there are times when she thinks she's not very bright. Oh, actually, there was one. There was another story called Ski Skirmish, and yeah, this one's was my least favorite. It's just basically like it's the sh I think it's the shortest one probably too, but it basically comes down to like the gang's all out at like a ski lodge, and Betty's terrible at skiing, and Veronica's good because she has like a personal trainer, and the tables turn on the situation because the trainer ends up being like super duper strict, and like later on everybody's hanging out and having fun and he won't let her do anything and sends her to bed because they're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But one final thing I was going to mention was just this kind of funny. They have this page before the last story. It's called The Natural Look, and it's just a picture of a girl with or portrait of a girl and a can of hairspray and a brush, and it's just a paragraph all about how the day of the beehive is over. I know you like this kind of thing, Mike. That's talking
I
about how
do.
there's that no more showers of hairspray to keep the delicate lacework of blown up hair in place. There have been some changes made. It's the natural look that's in front in today's hairstyles. And it's just talking about how nowadays you can just, go with natural hair, healthier hair, be yourself, be natural, and you'll get head full of lovely, clean, and soft hair, the hair he loves to touch. So these are funny. It's
How it tries
very,
to change fads or be up with the fads and the times is pretty cool.
yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, it's interesting. The Archie franchise is so interesting because obviously, like, this is not, there's so much that's wrong with what this is communicating to, like,
Yeah.
these stories, like, about the way that Betty and Veronica, like, everything that they did and said was focused on Archie, there's so much that's wrong with it, but like if you know that, it's you can get a chuckle out of it, like looking back. But it's very, there's very few franchises of this like nature that have been around for so long that you can kind of see how things change and compare it to, and that can still be adapted, like that they could make the current Archie comics that they've done, and like it's still something that can be adapted and fit into something that is like more fitting to current day,
Right.
So it's interesting to see how it's changed over time. But
I
yeah,
hear
I
they
like that
have a
these are
digital
available.
service too that's like an Archie Unlimited, like Marvel Unlimited,
Okay.
where and they do day and day digital. Not that they're pu publishing a lot of new material lately. It's pretty much two or three comics a month. There's usually like
Yeah.
an old school $2.99 Archie comic now, and then there's like a Sabrina and maybe something else. And that something else has been like a bunch of one shots lately. It seems like they're so much into the TV world now, and that's where they're more profitable, that their comics industry is sort of on standby, I guess. And the irony of the situation is they tried to kickstart, early on, do a
Oh,
Kickstarter with their stuff, and they got condemned for it. And the irony is that now everybody's doing it. Like, everybody's doing Dynamite. Boom is doing it with Keanu Reeves. I mean, now it's not frowned upon, but, they tried to be one of the early pioneers and they were frowned upon, so.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's weird. But my last pick is Maximum Overdrive, the Stephen King written and directed film while he was on cocaine, and starred Emilio Estevez. It had Pat Hingle as well, who was Commissioner Gordon in the 1989 Batman. There are several actors in there that you'd recognize. Lisa Simpson was in there, the woman that does her voice. But it centers around, there's a comet that's passing Earth. And that comet leaves a gas-like cloud around the Earth that animates anything mechanical, motorized, or any of that kind of stuff. They turn into things that have minds of their own. Like a pop machine could go live, a money machine. How one of the scenes opens up with Stephen King going to a bank, and there's like a digital display right above the ATM, and the digital display is basically saying, "Fuck you, fuck you." And then he goes to the ATM and he goes to try to release money, and it's like, "You fucking asshole," and he's like calling his wife, "Look at this." And then shit just goes nuts. Like, a pop machine kills a coach. He's trying to get cokes for his baseball team, and it starts launching soda pops out of the bottom of the thing at a velocity of like 65 miles an hour, and clocks him in the groin, and then he falls to the ground, and then clocks him in the chest, and then it clocks him in the head and kills him. And then it starts launching at all the kids that are in the field, and there's like a bulldozer that runs over a kid that's trying to get away on his bike, and it's just like utter chaos. A pizza delivery guy gets killed by his VW bug crashing into a tree in the window. So there's all kinds of weird stuff that happens, and then it centers around a truck stop that's out sort of on the outskirts of Norfolk. I think it's, no, it's not Virginia. It's North Carolina. I can't think of what part of North Carolina was it in? Do you remember? It was filmed near Raleigh, but it wasn't in Raleigh. It wasn't in Raleigh, and it wasn't in Charlotte. It was another place. Yeah, that's what I think it was. So, it was, in that part of North Carolina that things are going nuts, and Emilio Estevez is a fry cook at the truck stop, and the truck stop owner's like played by Pat Hingle. He's a real asshole. He wants to pay him for 8 hours a day and have him work nine, and there's all that kind of stuff happening. And then there's a Bible salesman that's has a hitchhiking lady that's driving along with him, who plays the love interest later on of Emilio Estevez. And it turns out to be, there's a bunch of trucks, and the one iconic truck is a truck that has like a green goblin on the front of the truck, and it's sort of like the leader of the vehicles that are surrounding the truck stop. And you're like, okay, they just have to outwait these trucks because they'll eventually run out of gas. But eventually the trucks have like a motorized, like it looks like a platform vehicle with a machine gun drive to the truck stop, and it essentially guns down a lot of the people. Pat Hingle's got a warehouse of weapons though in the basement, and they use like rocket launchers early on to destroy a lot of the trucks. But then they're kind of held hostage to have to pump gas into these trucks to keep them alive, and they do it. And then Emilio Estevez eventually gets sick of it, throws a grenade on the platform machine gun and blows that up. And then the truck sort of, and then it's sort of like a George Romero film, because the trucks just say, screw it, they betrayed us, we're just going to ram into the building and bring it down. And that's what they do. Well, they escape through the sewers. They get out and then they go to the ocean marina and get on a boat that's non-motorized and like a sailboat, and then they head off to sea. So it's kind of like something like at Dawn of the Dead or some kind of those like zombie. And interesting enough, they said that, and I don't know how true this is because Stephen King doesn't say much about it other than George Romero was on the set almost all the time, but there's rumor that there were some scenes that George Romero directed because Stephen King was so hopped up on cocaine he couldn't direct. And George Romero came and finished those scenes for him. So yeah, he was around there, and you could tell towards the end that it started to film like a George Romero film, so I don't know if that's when things started to break down. But it's a usually entertaining film for sure. Like Stephen King doesn't like it at all. Joe Hill wants to remake his dad's film, which could be interesting. And so far, Joe Hill's done pretty good. Like I've been reading his comics, but he's had Nosferatu show up on TV, and that's been a good show, a creepy like Christmas type. It adds the Halloween-ish horror to something that people celebrate, like Christmas. Makes Christmas like a horror time. And the other thing is he's got is Lock and Key, which I just finished on Netflix, and that was really good. That is sort of like horror slash fantasy, because these keys grant like certain powers and capabilities. But I'd be interested to see what he could do with Maximum Overdrive. There's a lot of fun tidbits on IMDb about the film, and one of the things that was happening a lot with the trucks is they built these like extravagant remote control controllers so they can control the trucks driving without people in them. And they would break down almost daily. So it's like they would fix one truck and then the other truck would break down. Then they'd fix that one and then another truck would break down. And yeah, a lot of things like that. But it's on Amazon Prime now. And I think it's a worthwhile, especially if you like campy type films and stuff like that, horror movie to watch. Plus, it's a good historical thing to see, like from a Stephen King perspective of where he was in his life at that particular time.
I mean, I've been a Stephen King fan for a long time. I've never seen that, but I could see for him, you know, it's like a, I know that was a rough period of his life, and I like his family had to have an intervention with him, and like, you know, that was an addiction that he overcame, you know, fortunately, that he fortunately beat it, but I can imagine it's not something that he wants to revisit, you know, that period of his life. But yeah, it would be interesting to see from like a, like you said, from a campy perspective. I mean, I wonder even if like with Romero, like even not with drugs being a part of the picture, it's not like, I don't think Stephen King really had much experience as a director, you know.
Yeah, he said Stephen King admitted that he was there almost every day on set, and they built the truck stop from scratch. So like they said they had a lot of problems like building it because it looks so realistic that truckers were coming off and pulling off onto the set because they thought it was a real truck stop, and it was built specifically
Jeez.
for this movie, sort of in the middle of nowhere, but it looks so realistic. And then one other interesting tidbit is there's when things are going nuts, this truck stop has like an arcade, and there's a young man that's in the arcade, and like the cigarettes are coming out of the bottom of the cigarette machine, and the money's coming out of the change machine to play the video games, and that young man is the chicken man from Breaking Bad, who's also a Darth in The Mandalorian now. But that's that same actor, so it was interesting to see him as a very young person in this film.
That's pretty funny. I like
Yeah.
that actor in
Yeah,
Breaking Bad.
he gets killed by a video game, just like electrocuting him to death. But yeah, it is a bloody film. They said that the steamroller thing was kind of cool because they had filled a dummy kid with these blood bags of red, and they wanted it to like smear so the cement roller would have like a blood stain on it, and then when it would track on the grass, so like it would have a red stain on the glass grass, but when it actually hit the blood bags, it blew up, like it just splattered everywhere sideways and everything, and didn't have that effect. But there's a lot
Jeez.
of fun factoids to read from this movie. You could spend a half hour just reading, some of the making of, and there's a lot of neat tidbits.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a pretty crazy production.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's all I had.
That's it for me.
And that's on Amazon Prime, so if you have it, you could watch a Stephen King film for free. It doesn't cost you a lot of time. It's only like 1 hour and 20 minutes. It's a very short film. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty funny, I guess, to watch, but I enjoyed it as much as when I saw it at the theaters in high school, and enjoyed it back then, and saw that it was on Amazon Prime and wanted to watch it again. I might have heard somebody talk about it like on Nerdy Legion, and it put like a little thing in my brain. But it also has the most wonderful, if you're an AC/DC fan, the whole soundtrack for the movie is AC/DC. And they made a specific song called "Who Made Who" for this movie, and it's pretty cool because there's this waitress there, and she flips out. She like goes out to yell at the machines. She's like yelling at the trucks, like, "We made you! You didn't make us, we made you!" And then they just gun her down, like that machine gun just da 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 just shoots her right off the bat. But they start playing that song, "Who Made Who?" And I'm like, this is so cool. Their timing of songs is pretty good.
have heard that song. I didn't realize it was from the movie.
Yeah. I
But
had the
that makes
cassette
sense. That's funny.
from back in the day, and I listened to it many, many times. But on Twitter, you
Nice.
can reach Chris at MythMakingETC, me at Mike Myers Brutch, Rob at Rob Krieger, and we are at GeekBunchPodcast.com, and we'll catch you again in 2 weeks, hopefully.
All right, yeah, be safe,
Yep.
everyone. Be safe, Mike.
You too. And I think we'll be past Thanksgiving, right? If we record in
Yeah,
2 weeks.
I think
So
so,
we're
yeah.
not planning on doing anything. We're ordering
Yeah,
a
us
from a
neither.
honey baked ham, a turkey, a turkey breast, and just having our own little thing.
Yeah, I'm
And
just gonna enjoy having a couple of days off,
Yeah, I'm
and
taking
it's only,
Thursday and Friday, so I have a 4-day weekend. So
yeah,
that'll
same
be
here.
nice.
Yep.
Just have to get through another 8 days.
You'll make it.
Yeah. All right, well, it's been fun.
Right,
Check out
yep, good
Maximum
talking to you.
Overdrive on your 4-day weekend.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, talk to you later.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.